Hey, welcome to Big Jim's Garage. I'm your host, Big Jim O'Brien. Oh, it's my buddy. We're going to talk to Mario Andretti here in just a second. Give him a call on the phone. You know Mario. Indy 500, check. Daytona 500, check. 24 Hours of Le Mans, check. Let me see. Formula One World Championship, check. Greatest race car driver of the 20th century, according to Time Magazine, check. It's Mario, man. He's been a friend of the podcast for a while, and we just love talking. There's so much that went down. I mean, you think about the NASCAR race and how we wound that up in Pocono, and then the IndyCar race in Mid-Ohio and Formula One. I really want to get into it with him, and of course, let's go ahead. Get Mario here. We're on time.
Hello.
Mario, it's Jim O'Brien in Detroit. How are you, sir?
Oh, great, great. Good morning. How are you?
I am so pumped up to talk about what went down in racing yesterday. That was crazy.
Interesting, yeah.
So,
totally interesting racing weekend, for sure.
Let me ask you a question, Mario. The first thing I was thinking about you, I'm watching the Formula One race in Germany, and I kept thinking about Sebastian Vettel and confidence. When you come from 20th to second place, the way he did, especially the past month or so that he's had, does that give him the confidence maybe to walk away at the end of the year where he's like, look, I know I still have it? Or does that motivate him to stick with it even more?
Oh, I think he'll stick with it even more. I think I know him enough that he's not ready to give it up. He's loving his place at Ferrari, and I think he's been affected by the pressure from Leclerc. But at the same time, he's got a lot of racing in him, and he needed this really badly. Obviously, everybody made mistakes. You know, some got away with them. You know, and the ones that got away with them, you know, benefited, of course. You know, but it was just incredible. I mean, it the conditions there. I raced there, and we only had wet in practice, and I never realized it was that slick because it was like an ice skating rink there.
Right. Yeah. So was there a track for you when you were racing F1, though, that you just did not want to drive when it was wet?
No, not really. I mean, it's, you take it the way it comes. You know what I mean? It's there for everybody to deal with. So, quite honestly, I never felt that way about any track.
So going back to Sebastian Vettel then, I mean, obviously you talked about knowing Seb. Is Ferrari the best place for him, or does he do what Kimi Raikkonen's done and maybe go to another team where he can be the number one driver and maybe focus that way?
No, I think Ferrari is where he needs to be. They're still supporting him very heavily, and there's value in Sebastian yet. Like I said, I think he needed the boost like this, perhaps, and I think you might see, I'm predicting you might see a different Sebastian for the rest of the season.
How good is Max Verstappen? Are we just kind of on the tip of the iceberg with this guy?
Yeah, for sure. I think Max is definitely championship material, no question. He has matured tremendously, even from last year, from the standpoint of not pushing the envelope, you know, beyond, the limits. And you can see that, he's very aggressive and everything else. But at the same time, he's got everything going for him as far as the ability. And I think it looks like even the character, you know, that it takes. He's very strong and determined. He is an exceptional talent for sure.
Your family and your upbringing, Mario, did that give you maybe some, I would say an advantage, I mean, as far as maturity when you got into racing?
Well, I think, it's hard to really put a put your finger or something like that. I'm looking back, you know, the mistakes that I've made. I said, God, I wish I, like all of us, I wish I could do a lot of things over again. But the main thing is, do you learn, you know, from mistakes? That's the main thing. And well, I was fortunate in my career at the early part that, you know, when I got into the top level of IndyCars, I had the right people. Jim McGee, Clint Bronner, you know, my the chief mechanics, the ones closest to me that kept me calm. You know, do you know, as hard as you're going to go is good enough for us. Don't overdo it. You know, bring it home. All of those things, and that was very meaningful for me. The thing that I've learned, that I've seen, you know, it was with me, but also with drivers that are out there, you cannot teach anybody to go fast. You will not, you cannot teach people, drivers, to go fast. It's got to be in their belly or not. But you can teach them to be safer and calm down. And those are the real talents that obviously, you know, will be champions. And those are rare, I can tell you that. And like Max is one of those that obviously fits that mold, and so does Leclerc. You know, Leclerc, will he learn from his mistake? And you know, he had a couple mistakes the last few races. Yes, you know. But will that deter him from being what he is, being able to bring home results? No. He's there. He's got the quality that it takes to make it exciting and bring home championships ultimately.
Were you? I was going to ask this because I was thinking about it. If you're Valtteri Bottas, or even if you're Carlos, not so much Sainz, am I thinking about for Red Bull? The number two, if you're the number two driver, for especially you're behind a guy like Hamilton, or you're behind Max. Was there ever a point in your career where you were the number two driver, maybe when you first started, and you had to work your way up? And how frustrating is that? Or how frustrating can it be?
Well, I think you learn your spot, you know, quite honestly. I mean, it's okay, if you're number two and you're only given maybe inferior equipment or attention is one thing. But even as a number two, you know, technically Leclerc is a number two at Ferrari. Is he accepting it? No. There are drivers like when you look at when Schumacher was, you know, the premier, obviously, you know, nobody could beat him. And he had the perfect teammates, Barrichello, you know, and Felipe, you know, and you know, he had, again, you know, he was just when you have a teammate that you can, you know, you can only pick up the pieces. Like for Vettel, the perfect teammate was Raikkonen, because he was there to pick up the pieces but not to bother him.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, still, you know, the real quality driver like Leclerc, he comes in as a number two, you know, as a rookie in a sense, you know, because he comes from an inferior team. And he earns, he's going to be earning number one position because he's not accepting number two. So it's still, the driver still has the responsibility. It's you earn your spot as a number one. You're not given that.
So if you were starting a team tomorrow in F1 and there's no contracts, nothing, you get to pick Max, Charles, or Lewis Hamilton, who's your number one?
Oh, I would take Charles.
Really?
Right now. Yeah.
Just that skill and the youth on his side and everything?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's either Charles Verstappen, one of the two.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to watch. And the last thing before we get into IndyCar, Mario, it's always fun to me that when I'm watching the race, I get frustrated because I know the history of Williams. And to see them as backmarkers and so far back, but then in my head I go, look, George Russell knows this, that he doesn't have a car that's capable of competing for a win. So it's literally like doing a driving audition every week, isn't it?
Well, it is. You know, it's sometimes it's sad because it's difficult, if impossible, to really evaluate a talent like that. You know, and you know, I feel for the young Russell because, of course, you know, he's you know, in general, he's always quicker than Kubica, but At the same time, you know, it's not doing much for his career at the moment, quite honestly.
Well, look at, I mean, and we move on to Indy with Alex. With Alexander Rossi, I mean, I remember watching him in F1, and he was outperforming the guy he was against, but he wasn't getting a full-time shot. He would drive, and then he'd be out for another week. So, it's such an interesting political game that goes on in F1, even amongst the larger teams, for who's getting that second seat.
Yeah, no question. That's the thing that you could probably take at least half the field and you put them in, in a Mercedes or a Ferrari, and they would bring on results. It's just so difficult to really totally evaluate because there's such disparity in equipment, which has always been, by the way. There's nothing new.
Right.
You know, you look back in Formula One, there's always been one, two, never more than three teams that could possibly win any given season. So there's nothing different. That's the character of Formula One, and that's what we have, and that's it.
So we move on to IndyCar, and it's funny, we go from one discipline in F1 where the back markers are getting lapped, and then IndyCar where it feels like everybody's in a dogfight every week. And even at Mid-Ohio, Mario, normally when you have a race as a fan where there's no cautions, it tends to spread out the field and you get that vibe. But there was so much competitive racing from the beginning to the very end, and the ending of that race was crazy.
Yeah, but that's the beauty, as I keep saying about, the series, the IndyCar series, how good it actually is. Because, as you said, no cautions, and yet, you know, one, two, three, they were within less than a second, like one, two was right there. You know, it was the closest finish in years. Or probably ever at Mid-Ohio, and third place was right there, like within a second or a second and a half. So, I mean, that tells you the quality of this racing that we have in IndyCar today and the talent that's out there. I mean, as I said, I keep saying the veterans are still young enough, and then you have some incredible young talent coming on that is going to keep making it more and more exciting. I'm so pumped up about this series, you know, I can't even explain it, you know, just how wonderful that is at the moment.
And the end of the race, too, I heard Ganassi get on the horn with them and tell Dixon and Rosenquist, race each other fair. No team orders other than don't take each other out. They still almost did. But I was thinking, Mario, when they made contact, if they'd been using the design from 2 years ago with that sort of shroud over the right rear, they would have wrecked.
Yeah, and, you know, again, like I said, the cars, I love the fact that we got away from that almost sports car look, you know,
right.
A couple of years ago with Dallara. I think they were hanging too many pieces on that single-seater car, and now the cars are pure. They're pure open-wheel cars, and as you can see, you don't have so many pieces that it would interfere and all of that, to hit. And you touch wheels, if you do it, if you do it right, you get away with it. But as teammates, it's fair enough to fight hard. But the cardinal rule is, always don't take each other out. It's a sad story, when that happens. And it's happened a few times, in our sport. But that's a no-no for sure. But I think Rosenquist, as a young lad, he used a lot of good judgment, and Scott couldn't run any harder because he would run out of fuel. So
right.
he was doing his very best to still stay ahead and not push it, too hard so you run out of fuel. So, again, it was a masterful performance by both of them.
Who was the guy when you drove IndyCar, Mario, that you didn't really want to get wheel-to-wheel with? They might give you a little tap.
I don't want to mention that.
A.J. Foyt?
There was one or two.
I would imagine A.J.'s the kind of guy that just looked at someone and goes, that's my spot, I'm going to take it.
No, I tell you what, AJ was one of the cleanest drivers you'd be with. He was too smart for that, and he's one of the guys you could definitely trust.
I had a chance, I had to mention this to you, Mario. I had a chance, we talked to Roger Penske a couple weeks ago here, It was actually with him and John Menard Jr., the, you know, sponsors of the racing teams. And when I asked him, Mr. Menard, about the what makes IndyCar so popular this year, he pointed at the car, to your point earlier, and said, look at that car. It's beautiful.
Well, that's part of it. The package, I think, is really a great package, and they keep tweaking it, you know, with the aero packages. And again, there's still work to do. I think there should be a little more leniency. They sure allowed more freedom as far as the downforce factor. You got a wing package, but let him put a bigger, smaller wicker built and so forth. I think it will move things around a little bit more. But at the same time, like I said, there's no magic wand. At the moment, I think they're looking pretty good. But again, I think this time the foreseeable future, they got a great package going.
Roger Penske was so happy when I mentioned, I said, how did you build the Mercedes, for the 94 Indy 500, the beast, you know, their Ilmor motor, and then test it in your backyard and get away with it? And he had the biggest Cheshire Cat grin on his face. And he was like, he just said, well, not a lot of people knew about it. And we kept it a really good secret. And I'm like, but you did it in Mario's backyard. You were testing there. He goes, oh, I think they knew we were testing something, but they didn't think it was that. Did you know what they were doing there?
No, how could we? I mean, it's usually in those tests that you were not allowed to attend. So, what would you do? We didn't have drones in those days, so you can put a drone over the track. he pulled a Granatelli, like Granatelli when it came in with the turbines in Indianapolis. You know, he had so much advantage, and obviously at the end of the day, I think they were not able to just come away with a win. But, in 67, 68, they had it covered. I mean, they would start the race. They were not the fastest car, but when race trimmed, they would start the race with 35 gallons of fuel, where we had 75 gallons of fuel to go the same distance. I mean,
wow.
you figure it.
Wow.
You know, so and as soon as they ruled it, you know, so it's comparable as far as as performance, then all of a sudden there was no advantage, and then they didn't make any sense. But and that's what Roger came on. You know, he went into the gray area of the rules. He got away with it, and touché for him.
Do you think that had anything to do with the IndyCar kart split, or was that train already heading down the tracks before that?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with the split. I think he just got away with one. You know, he was smarter than the technical side of the series. You know, it was a rule it had to be push rod, but Mercedes doesn't have a push rod engine. I don't know when they had a push rod engine. You know. So they got away with one there.
Well, Joseph Newgarden didn't get away with one yesterday. Were you surprised by that move so late in the race?
Hey, you know what? You know, when you go for it sometimes, it's I never fault a driver for really going for it. And sometimes you pay for it, but again, he's young, and you learn from something like that. So that's hard racing, period.
And then getting Alexander Rossi, obviously back with Andretti, and he's such an interesting character to me. When I interview him or you see him race, he's cerebral, but he seems to be an old soul to me every time I'm around him.
Yeah, he's I tell you what, he's very grounded. You know, I really like the guy, and again, this is a talent that was certainly not recognized in Formula One. And they passed by him, and it's shame on them, actually, because we could have had an American there that could have made us proud. But happy to have him here.
Oh, he's an amazing driver.
Michael is delighted. He's a complete driver. You know, when you look at he's always there, whether it's an oval, a high-speed oval, you know, a super speedway, a short oval. Any type, you throw anything at him, and he's right there. And that's a complete race driver, and that's the form of a champion. And that's what, that's why Michael, you know, really fought to keep him. And everybody's happy. So, yeah, that was it was good to put that behind him. And now just keep concentrating on just bringing home the bacon.
I asked him a question about the last five laps at Indy. And I was asking about, A, can you train your body for the mental aspect of that race? And he didn't know the answer to that. He goes, you know, these guys train so hard and in such amazing shape, but there's a point where it's all mental. Was that the same way with you and at the end of most races, Mario?
No question. No question about it. I mean, this is something you cannot, I mean, you just go for it. You just react to the moment. You cannot, there's nothing that can be planned there. But you got to have the mental capacity to deal with it and the skill to pull it off. What he was doing at Indy was just unbelievable. It was frightening, but unbelievably skillful. And, of course, he trusted a lot of elements, and that's the way it is. I mean, you're not going to win races by laying back and leaving anything on the table. That's what I always keep saying. You know, if everything seems under control, you're just not going fast enough. and that's the way it is. You know, like you got to put it on the line. You know, if you're going to win, if you're going to bring home results, and you know, the duel between he and Pagano at Indy was one for the ages. Were just unbelievable to watch, and that's, like I said, those are classy champions.
Yeah, Simon said that was the best. That was the best five laps of racing he's ever done in any series in his life.
No question.
Yeah.
No question about it.
So now that we've done this, Mario, we had another conversation. Do I get a discount on that Lamborghini of yours they're selling for
$500,000? Yeah.
If I drop your name, can I get the price down about $480,000 so I could get one?
I'm not even sure that it was mine, quite honestly. But,
oh, come on. Really?
Yeah, I'm not even 100% sure. But I have nothing to do with that thing, obviously. But they keep throwing my name around on that one. But I was looking at my the lineup of Lamborghinis that I had, and I'm not 100% sure. That's 100% sure that was mine.
What was your baby? What was the one that you loved? You know, we see drivers now. I see Hamilton and all them with their Mercedes, and you see guys with their Bugattis and their different cars. What was your baby, the one that you just loved?
Well, many cars. I love the moment. You know, I don't look back. I look forward. I always like the latest one that I have, you know. And
so what are you driving now?
Well, the sports cars, I have a new ZR1 Corvette. You know, still, you know, the 2019, and then I have a Lamborghini Aventador S. I think it's for sports cars. Each one's got its own quality, and that's it, you know. So I don't know what the next thing is going to be, you know, but I try to treat myself, you know, with sports cars. I'm a car guy for sure. And again, you know, but I always enjoy the latest and greatest.
What did you think about the mid-engine Corvette?
I think it's going to be awesome. I have not seen one yet, you know, in my eyes. Everything I hear is very positive, and it's something that for sure I'm going to go for. I don't know if it's going to be next year, but my ZR1 is still brand new, so I'm going to enjoy my ZR1 for a couple of years probably and then go to the mid-engine one.
I got a Bullet Mustang. I could come your way and come visit.
Sure, anytime.
Okay. All right, we'll take you up on that. Mario Andretti, thank you so much for the time. MarioAndretti.com, of course, the website. Is there anything else we should know about you're working on right now?
No, it's, you know, all the same things, you know. Just, by the way, if you have a nice meal going, have a glass of Andretti wine.
Okay. And I would encourage everyone to watch the special that NBC did on you. Was eye-opening, and my wife, who's not a huge racing fan, said she now feels more connected to racing because of that, because she knows you opening up and telling that story. It was just amazing.
Yeah, they were very complimentary to me, and I'm very grateful for the time that they gave me on that, for sure.
Was it, I hate this
NBC
word.
It was wonderful to me, yes.
It's not cathartic, but what was it like to film all that again, to go back there?
Oh, it was great. You know, it's not that I go back, you know, occasionally, always stay in touch with my native town, and I'm the honorary mayor of that town, believe me.
Look out and, now. Okay.
I have an office there, but no windows, but
okay, it sounds like Detroit.
They have a little museum in that town, believe it or not. You know?
Oh, no, I believe it. Mario Andretti. Mario, it's always great talking to you. We appreciate the insight and everything, too. Enjoy the week. Thank you, buddy.
Anytime.
All right, bye-bye. Well, there we go. Mario Andretti. Yep. Make sure you subscribe to the Garage Podcast. You can catch up on all the old episodes. Everybody from Mario to Roger Penske to Bobby Unser to Bill Goldberg, who should be on with us next week, as a matter of fact. Again, B-Pod Studios. You can hit me up on Twitter at WCSXJim. Apple, wherever you get your downloads, where you subscribe for your podcast, man. Great guy. Just a great guy. You be well. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate the time. Go get him.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.